If you think about prevention and staying healthy, now we're showing, we just published in two different trials showing biological age reduction in people that do the FMD for three cycles. We show reduction of CRP, so systemic inflammation. We show reduction in total cholesterol. We show reduction in IGF-1, some of these markers, risk factors, markers for cancer, blood pressure decrease, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that it's hard to think of something that, I mean, some of it now, this is being clearly demonstrated. Some of it still needs more clinical trials. But, you know, you're starting to get the sense that whether it's obesity or many of these other things that I mentioned, it's working and it's working very well.
You are here for a reason, but navigating this human life can be challenging. How do you care for your body, mind, and spirit to make the most of your time here on Earth? How can you harness your incredible human potential? In this podcast, we explore these questions and more to help you craft your best life yet. Welcome to I Am Human. Hi, humans. I am your host, Dr. Yami, and I am so excited to be here with you today. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast. It truly makes our day. To be human means to use the evidence we have from successful people around us and science to find ways to live better and longer. And our expert today, Dr. Valter Longo, is very passionate about this aim. Dr. Valter Longo is internationally recognized as a leader in the field of longevity and age-related diseases. After extending the lifespan of a simple organism tenfold by a combination of fasting and genetic mutations and discovering one of the most important pathways in longevity research, his group identified in humans an equivalent mutation associated with protection from cancer, diabetes, cognitive decline, and cardiovascular damage. His laboratory later described and developed the fasting-mimicking diet and published on its effect on multi-system stem cell activation, reprogramming, and regeneration. This led to over 30 clinical trials on longevity and age-related disease, some demonstrating the effect of fasting-mimicking diet cycles in reducing biological age, causing diabetes regression, and potentially increasing survival in cancer patients. Dr. Longo is a professor of gerontology and biological science and director of the Longevity Institute at the School of Gerontology of the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, one of the world's leading centers devoted to teaching and research on aging. His book, The Longevity Diet, is an international bestseller, translated into over 25 languages, and sold in more than 30 countries around the globe. In 2018, he was included among the 50 most influential people in healthcare by Time Magazine. He is the founder of the nonprofit organizations Create Cures Foundation in the U.S. and the Valter Longo Foundation in Italy, which provide lifestyle education for children and adults and nutritional assistance to optimize healthy longevity. And in this episode, we talk about how he became interested in longevity and how he made this huge change from studying music to going into science. What I love the most about that conversation is how one of his professors tried to discourage him and tell them that he was going to fail, but now he is one of the world's leading experts in this area. We talk about the longevity diet, what it is, and how he discovered it. Why we should aim to keep our protein intake low, especially from animal products, what his thoughts are if we can consume too much plant protein, and if plant protein in large amounts can affect longevity negatively, or is it mainly just animal protein? We talk about the fasting mimicking diet, what it is, how he developed it, how we can use it, can it be used to prevent disease, some advantages of using the fasting mimicking diet over water-only fasting. And then we also talk about his personal way of eating and whether he practices time-restricted eating and also the FMD. This is a great episode. Dr. Longo is a huge expert in this area, so it was a big honor to have him on the show, and I'm very grateful for that. And I hope that you really enjoy this episode and get a lot from it. I think you will, because there's lots of little great nuggets in there. And if you have never tried the Prolon fasting mimicking diet, it's something that you can acquire online or through your doctor. So check that out. So thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. And now let's welcome Dr. Valter Longo. The information on this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to replace careful evaluation and treatment. If you have concerns about your health or well-being, please consult a healthcare professional. Dr. Valter Longo, welcome to I Am Human. What a pleasure and an honor to have you.
My pleasure.
Well, before we started recording, I was telling you that I'm very jealous that you are in Italy. So it'd be nice if me and all the listeners could be there with you, enjoying all the delicious Italian cuisine and the beautiful sights of Italy. So very nice that you're there right now.
And the heat.
It's hot, huh? Well, there's really good things. So, you know, it makes up for it. Okay, well, let's start from the beginning. Why did you become interested in longevity?
I've always been interested in longevity since my first year in college. I was actually a jazz performance major in Texas. And but I always wanted to do, I think I always wanted to study aging. And so the first opportunity I had, I quit the music program and switched to biochemistry for the purpose of studying aging. And I don't know, I mean, there may be a lot of reasons for it. Certainly one of them, being in the room when my grandfather died. I think, you know, I was 5 years old or something like that. And so I think that just the scene, actually somebody died, it stuck in my head is a really bad thing, you know. And maybe that's why I was so motivated at 19 to study aging.
That's so interesting. I remember now when you talked in your book about going from music to, you know, science. Do you feel like when you were younger, you were scientifically minded, or was that like a big switch?
I think it was a big switch to the point that I remember that the chairman of biochemistry said, it's never going to happen. You never took a biology class and you're not going to last more than a few months. And, you know, sure enough, I did, and I eventually joined his lab and started doing research in his own lab. And yeah, so I think that I had that in my head. You know, I was probably, you know, it was something came easy, but I'd never done any of it. Right? So I had no idea. Right? I had no idea. So
that's so amazing. You know, do you still play music? Do you still practice instruments?
I practice very little, though. Very little, I have to say, too many jobs, and then. By the time I get to all of them, there's not much left for the guitar.
Yeah, you need to sleep too, right? Because that's also part of longevity. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, tell us, what is the longevity diet and how did you discover it?
I'm from the area very close to where Ansel Keys, many years ago, came up with the Mediterranean diet, right? So it was a place very close to here, just you know, maybe 3 or 4 hours away by car. And then, you know, the Okinawa diet was based on what people ate in Okinawa and, you know, the Loma Linda. I just felt that it was really surprising that, you know, when I wrote the book in 2015, 16, there was still no science-based diet, meaning that the Mediterranean diet started because Ansel Keys said, look at the diet that these people have. They seem to not have cardiovascular disease or they have less. And so let's just clone it. Right? But I think that many, many years went by, like 50 years went by. And I thought it's really strange that we're still thinking that that's going to be the perfect diet. It just happens that the people in near Salerno, Italy, had the perfect diet. I don't think it's the case. And so, yeah, the longevity diet was about, you know, learning from Italy, from the Blue Zones, and learning from Okinawa, from Loma Linda, but then learning from clinical trials, basic research, centenarian studies, et cetera, put it all together and come up with not just a diet, but also a age-specific and personalized. So begin to talk about, you know, different people are going to potentially need a very different diet. And then a 90-year-old may need to eat differently from a 45-year-old. And yeah, so a lot of that went into the longevity diet.
And it takes evidence at different levels, like you were saying, from observational studies, these population studies, to also clinical studies, that you're using data from different levels of evidence to put this together. But I'm assuming also that it's dynamic, right? Like, it's based upon the best evidence we have now. Things could change?
Yes, yes. Things are definitely going to change. But I think when you put five pillars together, as I have done, for example, if you look at epidemiology, which is one of the major pillars, right? So the studies of populations. But usually I don't look at just any study. I look at meta-analysis, right? So if you look at meta-analysis in epidemiology, they may represent 50, 30, 40, 50 years of research, right? And that's just one of the five pillars, right? So if you put it together with everything else, chances are nothing much is going to change next year, right? So eventually, very slowly, things are going to change. But to go against meta-analysis, to go against 100 years of basic research on aging, to go against hundreds of clinical trials, I think that, yeah, you're not going to make a change tomorrow. Unfortunately, I think there's a lot of people that are in this space that don't use this. And they may, you know, the latest study came out and they're going to say, well, our coffee is bad, right? And then the new study comes around and say, coffee is good, right? So, and this is where people get confused. And that's when people think, well, you know, maybe this is true for this year, but next year we're going to have a new one, right? No, we're not, right? So we've been learning from, you know, if you think about a centenarian, and I've followed hundreds of centenarians personally, and, you know, they've been around for 100 years, right? So there's something that has already happened for at least 100 years. And that's just one of the things we learned. So yeah, I think things will change, but very, very slowly.
And not in a major way, maybe little tiny details, but not big ones. Explain to us a little bit about why we should aim to keep protein intake low. That is counter to popular culture, popular understanding of diet, and it's shocking to a lot of people. So explain to us a little bit about the protein intake and why that's important.
Yeah, so the popular understanding of this is based on commercial interest and maybe people that don't do this for a living necessarily, right? So I think that when you sit down with the people that all they do is this, you know, they will agree generally that you have to have sufficient but low protein. And every pillar, so if you look at the Okinawans, they had 9% of the calories came from protein. They had the record longevity for decades. Italians, Southern Italians, very low protein intake. Loma Linda, you know, relatively low. And then you look at the epidemiology studies and you look at the clinical studies. So everything points to sufficient but low. Now, you know, for its commercial interest, you know, whether you're selling chicken or protein powders, or red meat, or lots of things, we have proteins, there's a big business behind it. And that's, unfortunately, what we are, you know, we're facing now, what we used to face with the tobacco industry, right? So there's a lot of pressure to sell products. And I'm not saying nobody's evil because they're trying to sell chicken. You know, that's okay. I eat chicken, then, so it's okay. But the problem is that, you know, to sell more and more and more, I think now, we moved into, oh, this is great for you. Eat as much as possible versus now this enough is enough. And then after that, it's probably going to start accelerating your aging process, increasing your chance of developing cancer, increasing your chance of developing other diseases, especially if it's animal-based proteins.
Well, that was my next question is, what is the difference between plant proteins and animal proteins? Now, my audience is mostly plant-based vegan audience, but there's a push in the plant-based community now, up your protein. Could that be just as harmful, or is it less harmful than having a high animal protein diet?
Usually is much less harmful or not harmful at all because let's say you have equal amounts, or let's say you have health legumes and health seeds and nuts, right? And that's where you get your proteins from. Chances are, like, if you eat too much proteins from legumes, it would take like a pound a day or more. And even that would not be too much, right? And the legumes have very little essential amino acids. They have very low in certain amino acids compared to the meats, right? So then some of the amino acids, there is a five-fold difference between legumes and, let's say, red meat or another, and also some plant-based sources, right? But let's say that somebody had 50% legumes and 50% other plant-based sources, it'll be extremely difficult to have excess amino acids of the type of amino acids that accelerate the aging process. Now, if you only had soy, for example, well, soy tends as a fairly high amounts of some of these amino acids. So I think it's a little tricky. You just have to learn about it. And, best is to talk to a nutritionist, dietitian a couple of times and just get on the right track and figure out, is this the right amount? And the right amount is usually 0.37 grams per kilogram of body weight. So per pound of body weight, right? 0.8 per kilogram. So if you weigh 100 pounds, it's about 40 grams of proteins. If you weigh 150 pounds, it's about 60 grams of proteins. And it should be mixed, if you're vegan, with seeds, nuts, and legumes.
Yeah, and that's like super easy to get with whole foods. I mean, it's very easy, especially if you are eating legumes and, different plant foods, even greens. If you have a good amount of greens, can give you some good amount of protein. So it seems like that would be easy. Now, one thing that you do emphasize, like you said before, is once you get older, you may need a little bit more protein, especially to stave off that frailty. But it's not that much more. So can you talk about the difference between me? I actually just turned 45. My grandmother's 90. So that example is perfect. So me versus my grandmother, what would be the difference there in protein intake?
If you have the 0.8 and you're mixing everything correctly, like you don't just have legumes, let's say you have a third legumes, nuts and seeds, you're probably okay, even after 65. But just to be sure, we move it to about 1 gram per kilogram, or 0.45 or so grams per pound of body weight. Yeah, so I think just to be on the safer side, because I think we don't want people that are 70 or 80 or 90 years old to be malnourished. So I really think if it's mostly plant-based and you have 1 gram per kilogram, that's not going to hurt anybody. But it may, in some person that is not very, a lot of people, they get distracted, let's say, and they may not have any proteins for a couple of days. And that's why I think being a little bit higher is probably going to help them, making sure that they're not malnourished when they get to such an old age.
Okay, well, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the fasting mimicking diet. Can you explain what that is and how you happen to come upon that and why?
Yeah, the fasting mimicking diet, we have lots of foundation clinics, right? And so in the foundation clinic, the healthcare professionals, when people come, they try to modify their diet. But some people are willing and most people are not willing, right? So that's one reason for the fasting mimicking diet, meaning that most people eventually are going to go back to what it is that they like to eat. And so the idea was to intervene maybe once a month for 5 days, or and maybe less, once every 3 or 4 months for 5 days. So is it possible that you can have a vegan diet that you just do for 5 days every once to a month, or once every 4 months? And that's going to help you reset to be healthier for a long, long time, not just for the 5 days, but for months after. And then also, is it possible that it's going to have additional reprogramming, regenerative effects, right? So now we've done a lot of work in mice and rats, and now we're showing in many systems this 5 days of a fasting mimicking diet, being able to turn on stem cells, being able to reprogram cells in different organs, in the pancreas, in the gut, in the brain, in lots of different places, in the blood. And so then you have an opportunity to have a diet-like effect that is long-lasting, like a longevity diet-like effect. But then something that the longevity diet doesn't do is this effect on multi-system regeneration And, you know, we're only beginning to show evidence for this in humans, but we would be surprised if a lot of what we see in mice and rats is not true for also humans. It seems just a very fundamental property of shrinking a system and shrinking organs of a system of an organ of a human being and then re-expanding them. And what we see in this re-expansion process is the same type of developmental gene expression. So the same genes that are turned down when the humans are first born or mice are first born, they turn on in the refeeding moment, right? So yeah, this is the reasons why we think the fasting mimicking diet is potentially something that everybody should be, that every doctor and every healthcare professional, every person should consider, you know, for anywhere from, let's say, a couple times a year to 12 times a year. So now we've shown for diabetics that we can cause regression, diabetes regression. And this is in two different clinical trials. So 70% of patients are now reducing drug use. And then within a couple of years, we're starting to see people, unlike what you see with GLP-1 agonists, we're starting to see people go back to full health, no drugs. So, yeah, so these are some of the range, the big range of things that the FMD can do. I have to say, most of the studies we've now done, other people done, like University of Heidelberg, University of Leiden, now Stanford is running multiple trials, University of Miami, University of Indiana, USC. So yeah, I think it's good that we made this available to every university and hospital that wants to test it. And then we just say, we help them and, you know, we see what happens with it. And so far it's been remarkably positive results.
And, you know, it's so powerful. But I think one of the points that you're trying to make as well is that it's a way for the average person to be able to access the power of this, not just of a plant-based diet, but also fasting in an approachable way that's safe, that they can do at home and, you know, get them some of these benefits that otherwise they probably wouldn't, because especially now in the westernized world, some people are barely going even 8 hours fasting. I mean, like probably less the majority of people. So this is a way that they can do something like that, but in a more approachable and sustainable way.
Yes. So especially if the doctor, if the dietitians were on board, and if generally the media and the journalists were on board, I think that we would see a lot of people do it, right? So right now it's still early and everybody, the doctors are still very much drug oriented, and the dietitians are, you know, more based on, well, maybe I'll tell them what to eat. You know, they feel like they're doing more of a job if they tell people how to change their diet. So yeah, so it's taking time to get people used to this, but yeah, very much approachable. And of course, the best thing about it is that on day one or two, you can say you only have 3 days left, and then you go back to whatever it is that you like to eat, right? So, and also, I think the idea is that being exposed, let's say most people we see, after three cycles of the FMD, we see some changes, not very much. Actually, the University of Leiden tested that. The people don't change very much their diet, right? But they're starting. But after, if we talk to people that have done it 10 times, now that you've done 50 days of a vegan, low-calorie diet, right? They're beginning to feel better, and they're beginning to, on their own, without anybody telling them, saying, well, maybe I should eat more this way. Maybe I should be more vegan. You know, maybe I should have less of these high-sugar, high-starch foods because I don't feel so well. Right? So we've heard so many people saying, I used to have a lot of bread or a lot of pizza, and now I just don't feel comfortable with the same amounts as before after, you know, doing so many fasting mimicking diets. So I think it serves also a training purpose. And this is why we're now thinking about doing it with children, say 14 to 18, Children's Hospital now, LA Children's Hospital is considering, you know, so if you think somebody's 14, 15 years old and they're starting to gain weight and being very unhealthy, could this be a way to just get them used to be healthier and feel healthier, and then, you know, on their own making the change?
I think you make a great point, because You know, I've practiced for myself a lot of time-restricted eating, and that's the way I was able to discover some of my food sensitivities, because it creates a contrast. So if someone's doing it over and over and over again, they start to recognize, okay, this is how I feel when I eat this way. When I go back to my normal diet, this is how I feel. So the more times they do that, they're learning from their own body. They're starting to make that association. And so I could see how that would work over time, that just naturally they're like, actually, I'm gravitating more towards feeling this way and I want to feel less the other way. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And if you think about physical exercise, right, you know, most people, they start a 5K run or a 10K run. It's extremely difficult, right? And then you do it 4, 5, 6, 7. And I think by the time you get to 10 times, it's a different world, right? All of a sudden now this 5K doesn't seem like it. Now people run marathons, right? But, you know, 50 years ago, this was not very common, and especially in the United States. So I think that that's what we hope it happens, is that people say, okay, maybe I won't run every day, but, you know, I can run once a week or so. And so in this case, it'd be like, maybe I can do a fasting vegan diet once every 2 or 3 months and move in the right direction.
88% of the workweek is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise ready AI.
Can FMD be used as a preventative measure? We talked about using it in diabetes and in some of these disease processes, but can we start to think about it as a way to keep ourselves optimized, to keep ourselves, you know, primed for maximum longevity?
Yeah, I'm very biased, right? But I just don't see anything that is going to do that better than the FMD, right? Because, I mean, if you think about the general population, of course, there may be lots of things that people can do, exercise and eat, the longevity diet. That if you did all of that, maybe it's good or even better. But, I mean, realistically, again, people are not going to revolutionize their lives and all of a sudden start running every day and do it until they're 85 years old. So I think that if you think about prevention and staying healthy, now we just published in 2 different trials showing biological age reduction in people that do the FMD for 3 cycles. We show reduction of CRP, so systemic inflammation. We've shown reduction in total cholesterol. We've shown reduction in IGF-1, some of these markers, risk factors, markers for cancer, blood pressure decrease, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that it's hard to think of something that, I mean, some of it now, this is being clearly demonstrated. Some of it still needs more clinical trials. But, you know, you're starting to get the sense that whether it's obesity or many of these other things that I mentioned, it's working, and it's working very well. And in addition, it's not reducing lean body mass. So, for example, we ran a trial with the Mediterranean diet, 4 months of Mediterranean diet against 4 cycles of only 5 days of the FMD. And they both had beneficial effects, but the Mediterranean diet after 7 months resulted in 5 pounds of lean body mass loss, right? So probably mostly muscle loss. And the FMD cycles did not, right? So I think that there's a lot of, we've been doing this for 20 years and there's a lot of science and trials, and it's starting to look like we probably got it right, but we're going to keep letting people try it out and see if we can demonstrate, you know, say disease prevention. That's much harder to do, right? But it can be done.
Yeah. Takes a little bit of time. What are the advantages, or what do you think are some of the advantage of the fasting mimicking diet over just water only fasting?
Water only, first of all, any doctor in the world, or most doctors, let's say, will say it's a little dangerous, right? Some of them will say never do this water only fasting outside of a clinic, you know, that is specialized in it. And the rest of them, I think, will say, you can do it, but yeah, you never know, right? And so let's say it gets hot, somebody has already low blood pressure, there's no salts, and now you can see how somebody could pass out, right? So we've been thinking, and this is just the safety, but then there is a compliance. Like almost nobody I've ever met is able to do water-only fasting on their own at home, right? Yes, a few people I know have gone to the clinics and I'd be able to do it. And very few that I know have done it. I know people do it because there's people that, you know, had their grandparents doing it. So some people do it and do it, you know, very successfully, but it's just 1 in 1,000, let's say. Let's say, if I exaggerate, it's probably 1 in 1,000 that can regularly do water-only fasting. So, you know, we tried with water-only fasting, right? That was our first trial, you know, nearly 15 years ago, 13 years ago. So at USC, Norris Cancer Center. And so the first trial was water-only fasting on cancer patients. And we thought, of course, they're very motivated. They're all going to do it. And nobody wanted to do it. Nobody wanted to do it. It took us 10 years to recruit 30 patients. It's crazy. It is like the longest trial ever run at USC, right? So oncologists were worried about it and patients were worried about it. So then after that, this is how the fasting mimicking diet was born, because after we got surprised from this, we went to the government, the NIH, and said, can you fund research to replace water-only fasting with a fasting mimicking diet? And so that's what they did. And that's how we ended up with the FMD.
Wow, that's fascinating. I can't believe it took that long. Everybody's like, no, thank you. That doesn't sound like fun. Can you explain a little bit about how it works? So it is vegan, but it's higher in fat so that it makes your body think that you're going without calories. How does that work in your body?
First of all, it's not designed, contrary to popular belief, it's not designed to maximize the fasting, right? And why is that? The fasting response. We did not want people to go back and forth from a extreme fasting response, let's say water only, to a, you know, full calorie, full protein, sugar diet, right? And why is that? Well, we were worried that eventually doing it many, many times, say somebody did it 200 times, that this could cause some problems. I mean, we have no evidence for it, but this is how we think. We think that even 1 in 1,000,000, it's not acceptable, right? We think differently from pharmaceutical companies. So even why? Because this is preventive, right? This is not treating a disease necessarily. And so you're giving things to masses, to hundreds of thousands of people. You cannot say, oh, 1 in 1,000,000, that's okay, right? Like you would at the FDA, because, you know, if you're trying to treat cancer, that is reasonable. Yeah. So then we are thinking it's a high fat, low protein, low sugar, relatively high carbohydrates, right? So it's not very high, but relatively high, but it's very low calorie. And so it's a very low calorie diet made of carbs and lots of fats, essentially, right? So, but then there's all kinds of other components that have the job of making people eat, keeping the salt levels fairly high, but not too high, making people as not hungry as possible, right? So keeping the hunger down. It took us years and years and years to keep testing it and coming up with things that had all these features, right? So of course we suggest people do the clinically tested kind. I donate everything to charity. So I made the big mistake of not making a penny out of any of this, but I think it's the right thing, right? So I'm a professor and I keep my job as a professor I want to try to stay away as much as possible from conflict of interest.
Well, this has been great, Dr. Longo. Before we move on to the wrap-up questions, I'm curious about your personal way of eating. So how is your diet like? Do you follow the longevity diet? And do you practice any time-restricted eating? Do you do the FMD yourself throughout the year? I'd love to know.
Yes, I follow all of it and with some violations, especially when I'm in Italy. Because in Italy, it's impossible, right? You're like surrounded by people telling you, drink. So here, I do violate some of it. But yes, the longevity diet, so pescatarian diet, you know, fish maybe 3-4 times a week. And then the rest of it is vegan. You know, rarely I eat some other animal products, but I do once in a while. And then I do 12-hour time-restricted eating every day. And then I skip lunch actually Monday through Friday. And that's something that I've done for 20 years. Also to keep my weight very stable. And this is the only way I've been able to do it. Also, you know, being 6 months a year here in Italy. And again, being exposed to so much food surrounding me. So being able to then, you know, Monday to Friday, when I go to work and nobody, I have no pressure, I can do that. I prefer that over the 16 hours because now the 16 hours, as I had predicted in many interviews and articles, you know, there is an association with increased mortality from cardiovascular disease. There is an association now potentially if breakfast is skipped. But now there's some studies indicating that even if you don't skip breakfast, the 16 hours could be problematic, right? So I think 12 hours, maybe 13 hours of fasting every day. Seems like, I always say I've never met a physician that thought that was bad for you. So I think it's a good compromise. I mean, maybe not as effective as the 16 hours, but, you know, much safer than the 16 hours. They're much in tune, let's say, centenarians. Most of the centenarians I met, they probably did about 12, 13 hours of fasting every day. And then the fasting mimicking diet, yeah, maybe I do it a couple times a year. Yeah, so then I follow all of it.
Nice. Okay, thank you for sharing that. And yes, I was in Italy last summer and we were eating gelato 2 or 3 times a day. So I agree that it would be hard in Italy to keep a low sugar diet for sure. But, you know, we were on vacation. So that was our excuse, right? When you're on vacation, you always go a little bit more on the diet. But well, thank you so much. What do you wish more people knew?
I wish more people knew how important nutrition is, not just to live a lot longer, but, you know, to live well now, right? So there is an illusion here in Italy, in the United States, and all over the world that if you eat what you want, you're going to be happier. The reality is that you're probably going to be happier if you eat like the centenarians. You know, you have your extra thing, a chocolate or whatever once in a while, but essentially you eat a very healthy diet and then you have the violations rather than having violations all the time, right? So yeah. I also think that this is the only way we're not going to go. Every country in the world is not going to go broke. I mean, the United States GDP dedicated to healthcare is nearly 20%. So not sustainable, right? Italy is going up very rapidly and Europe is going up very rapidly. And nutrition, I mean, it's going to be, and I'm not saying this now, I think everybody's saying it, but nobody's doing anything about it. Is going to be the best way to address this, you know, without going spending even more money.
Yeah, well, I 100% agree with you on that one. How do you define success in this lifetime?
Yeah, success, I think it would be to reach all the people that, you know, want to make a change, right? In this sense, whether it's nutrition or, you know, living longer and healthier and, you know, and give them tools to get there, right? So, instead of saying, here's what you should do, but you cannot afford it, I think it'd be important. Or here's what you should do, and then 2 years down the road, you're going to be worse off than today. You know, how many people can we reach and give them advice so they can make a change that is sustainable and that makes them live long and healthy and happy?
I love that. Is there a goal or a dream that has evaded you or something that you have left on your bucket list that you'd be willing to share with us?
Yeah, probably to do like a tour, a band tour, right? So this is something that I always thought, well, I think it'd be nice to do like a fundraise, you know, find out like a fundraising cause and then get my guitar back out and get a bunch of, hopefully I can convince some famous musicians to adhere to it and, you know, and do a tour to raise funds for some disease or, you know, some medical cause. Yeah.
That would be so fun. Maybe think of Dr. Neil Barnard. Do you know Dr. Barnard from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine? He's a musician too. Y'all could link up and get a bunch of other, you know, health and nutrition experts and put a band together. And, you know, your band name has to be something very clever, of course.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I love it. I love the vision.
Yeah.
What does it mean to be human?
Probably, I would say it means to think about that happiness is not just about you, but trying to contribute to, let's say, other people, but not just people, other organisms on the planet and the environment. I think even if you think in a selfish way, most people don't realize that, but you're going to be happier if you are in this modality of helping, you know, other people, organisms, the environment, in addition to yourself.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Dr. Walter Longo, thank you so much for your time today. If you could just tell listeners where they can follow you, where they can find your work. And I know you have a lot of books in Italian as well, in addition to the book you have in English, The Longevity Diet. So if you could tell us where we can find all of those things, that would be great.
Yeah, so the book is The Longevity Diet it's a Random House, Penguin Random House. Avery is the subcompany. And you can find it everywhere. It's actually translated in, 25, 30 languages. So it's in a lot of countries. And then probably Instagram, Professor Walter Longo, and Facebook, I think, is also Professor Walter Longo.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Longo, thank you so much. All the way from Italia, we have been such honor to interview you today. I really appreciate all the work that you've done. Thank you for contributing so much of your life to help us live better and longer. We appreciate that so much. And I hope that you have a very fantastic day.
Well, thank you. Great to be with you. I'm Dr. Walter Longo, and I'm human.
Thank you for listening to another episode of I Am Human. I would be so honored if you subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. We love our listeners and take your feedback seriously. If you have questions or constructive feedback, you can email us at podcast@dryami.com. That's podcast@dryami.com. I am your host, Dr. Yami Cazorla Lancaster. I Am Human is produced by myself and Alejandra Parra. Graphics designed by Alejandra Parra. Music by Angela Sof with Glowbox Productions and edited by the Castos production team. Remember, human, you are here for a reason. Have fun, explore, and live your life to the fullest.
Percent of the work week is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise Ready AI.